This afternoon, we're going to take that sentiment that Anna just said and discriminate it out into a bunch of pieces so for us to look at. Before I do that, though, somebody brought up just at the end of the morning session that I missed the punchline, actually, this morning, when I was talking about when we align the different drives, what we get, and I forgot to say with the survival drive leads to selflessness.
What is it?
Selflessness. Selflessness. Okay. So, I'm going to start out this afternoon by talking about scarcity and how scarcity is a great lie. Maybe. Let's see. So, a quote. There is a natural law of abundance that pervades the entire universe, but it will not flow through a doorway of belief in lack and limitation. That's from somebody named Paul Zeiter. I don't know who he is, but I like the quote. The other one is from Eckhart Tolle. Abundance comes only to those who already have it. It is a universal law. Both abundance and scarcity are inner states that manifest as your reality. Jesus puts it like this: for to the one who has, more will be given. And from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken away. So maybe by the end of this afternoon that will make more sense to you. So we spend our days, if you think about it, in the mantra of not enough. Okay, I don't have enough. Did you ever say, I have enough? It's the default setting for our thinking about everything, whether it's love, money, relationship, clothes, time, spiritual experiences. And it's the internal condition that lives at the heart of our jealousies, of our greed, of our prejudices, and our arguments with life. If you look, we're often arguing with life about not having enough. And we bring this not enoughness to our relationship to money. When we start to unpack the scarcity mindset, we can start to see some beliefs that are at the bottom of it. So one of the beliefs is that there isn't enough. And it's a deficiency, a point of view of deficiency from which we conduct our lives. The other way that we can look at it, it's still from a sense of deficiency, is that I don't deserve it. I don't deserve abundance. I don't deserve. It also is a sense of lack, just from the other side of the coin. But either way, you're still living in scare city. So we end up in a kind of a deprivation cycle. So we feel like we don't have enough. We don't have enough fun, money, or love. We feel like we're working really hard, that we deserve something better. So we start to feel entitled and deprived. So we rationalize spending. For example, this was a really killer week. I deserve something from me. But it's costly to consume out of the sense of deprivation, because we can get caught. We can get caught in the more, bigger, faster stuff. And then we have to pay for it. So, for example, I need an iPod. And now I need a music machine that plays my iPod at home.
I need a new car to put my iPod in.
Oh, that's even better than mine. Mine was a new stereo system in my car. I never thought of the new car. But you see, we do that. We think we need all this bigger, more, faster stuff. And then we have to pay for it. And if you remember this morning, we were talking about this is our life, this is our energy. So we end up paying for this more, bigger, faster stuff with our lives, with our life energy. And it doesn't really ever satisfy us. Because then, as soon as you get that, the next thing comes out. The next new thing that's going to make the iPod obsolete. We don't know what it is yet. Just like our tape decks and our tape recorders are obsolete. So it doesn't really satisfy us. You can also see it when you buy one thing and you think, okay, I'll just spend the money on just that. And then as soon as you have it, the next thing that you want is right there. So it doesn't really satisfy us. And what we really want, if you look, is rest, time, connection, depth. So what would it be like to have what you want instead of what you deserve? So let's look at some of the things that you might find as you inquire into your own deprivation cycle. First of all, there's deficiency, the sense of deficiency, that there isn't enoughness. Deficiency is at the bottom of every ego. It has to be, because it's not being. So either we have our own sense of deficiency or we see the world as deficient. But either way, it is an aspect of the ego structure. You might run into a lack of basic trust, that you don't trust that things are going to unfold in the way they should. That if you really need something, it will show up in your life. You don't trust that. You think you have to go out and get what you think you need. Or even more, not believing that we don't have trust because we're not going to get what we need, but just don't see life's riches. We don't trust that there is abundance, that it's something we have to get. We have to go out and get. We believe we need something more. Or another thing you might run into is the lack of will, which is thinking that we have to do it, that we are the agency of what unfolds, it's up to us to do, or that money is a support, or that money is security. And you can see that it's more that a sense of security, a sense of support are actually aspects of being. That you can see lots of people who have a lot of money and they keep going for more. It doesn't bring you security. Or you might run into the cycle, the mind cycle of hope and desire. Hope we are going to get our needs met. Hope we are going to have what we finally want, the love that we want, the things that we want, which points to a lack of nourishment. Perhaps it goes right back to our infancy where there was a lack of nourishment. Or you might run into mind poisons like greed or desire and attachment, just in and of themselves, just those movements of our structures. And when we're focused out there, we believe, when we're focused outside of ourselves, we believe that those things out there are going to fill our needs, rather than sitting on the cushion, making contact with the true depth. So in a sense, all of these point to the whole of being. And it's the whole that makes us feel like there is no chance to be united with the absolute, to what we love, to who we are at our depth. And ultimately point to the lack of willingness to be present. So that's kind of discriminating out, separating out deprivation. Another belief that is under there is that, implied in that, is that more is better. And that's one that we have started, I think, now, to collectively question. It wasn't until recently that, as a society, we started to question this one. So remember, it isn't that long ago when 9/11 happened that, you know, what was the solution to what was happening? More is better. Go out and shop, please. That is going to fix the situation. So we believe somewhere that amassing more is going to slay this scarcity dragon, is going to affect this feeling in us. But it's not true. More money, more objects, more essential experiences. Has that really affected that in you?
I tell a little story.
Sure.
I learned several years ago that in the Danish language there is a word that means I have enough. We don't have such a word. Enough in English sort of sounds like, well, just barely getting by, you know. But in the Danish language, and I don't speak Danish, does anybody here speak Danish? There is a word so that people use it. Like you have, okay, I need 3 towels. And that is like, then you say that word. That's more than enough. And everybody understands and operates from that principle. It's a value in the culture. Everybody understands you don't need blah, 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 blah. You just need this amount. So that kind of shows us how out of balance we are. I like to think of not enough in 3 categories, that we don't have enough, that we haven't done enough, and who we are is not enough. And we operate from all 3, and our consumer-oriented media culture supports the notion on all 3 levels that we don't have enough, that who we are is not enough, we need to improve, 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 and that we haven't done enough. When does it end? When is enough really, really, really enough? When is enough enough? That's a great koan for our whole culture, I think.
Thank you. So, yeah, so our economy, in a way, banks on lust, the wanting of more, or it has up until this point. Our whole advertising, if you look at advertising, it is banking on lust. It's wanting us to lust after things. And part of the reason that is successful is because of the value placed on scientific thought in our history. It separated the body from being. It separated, you know, the secular from the spiritual. And so you know, the lust for the body then gets co-opted into going after, thinking it's going to satisfy things that it wasn't intended to satisfy. So when you look at just body lust, separated from being, separated from spirituality, separated from the wholeness of us, then it starts lusting after food, sex, objects. So you can see that it isn't just objects in our society, but we are a very obese society. So you can see that it's been co-opted into food. And when it comes to activities, we go after activities that are related to pleasure. So that is kind of animal lust, animal separated from being, and it gets out of balance. When it gets separated from our spiritual nature, from who we are, it gets out of balance. And so we start to have wants way more than our needs. Can somebody just lift that up? Oh, you can do that.
Do you want to pass those?
Yeah, we'll pass these out. So
this is from a New Yorker cartoon.
Just pass one around on one side and one on the other side. Can somebody just lift up that page?
This kind of says it all.
Yeah, just one. Just lift up one page. So as it gets passed around. No, just that one. Show that one.
Can you read that?
If you can't, you can see the cartoon. You see how our wants, big on the building, and our needs are just this little doorway? So that's what happens when we get out of balance. And one of the ways that it is apparent that we're really out of balance is our carbon footprint. That's a measure out of our out of balanceness. There's only one country that has a bigger carbon footprint than America, that's Australia, but that's because they sell their natural resources. It isn't a personal consumptive measure. So lust has become excessive because of the emptiness. It's this hole, this emptiness we feel from the separateness, the separation we have from being. So it's a deficiency-motivated drive. And we think that we're going to fix that outside of ourselves. If we just had more money, if we just had the right relationship, if we just had a better job, if we just had a new car, if we just had a bigger house, if we just had that, you know, those new boots that we saw at Nordstrom's. We start to realize that getting does not fill the hole. It hasn't filled our holes. But it's a habit. It becomes a habit. It's become a habit in our society. So we immediately search for the next thing. What is the next thing? That if it's not that, then what is the next thing that's going to do that for us? So when we do, we enter in this chase. We go in this chase. And when we get in this chase, what happens is it saps our energy. We put a lot of energy into that. And it erodes our fulfillment, which would come from being, from making contact with who and what we are in our deepest nature. And we end up defining ourselves as from some external achievements, external and financial goals. So I'm going to do a quote from Jacob Needleman. Our capitalist society creates ever new desires, and credit lets us buy them. Credit has gone from something you use for a serious need to satisfy superficial desires. It used to be that credit was there for people who were in dire needs. Now you know you get credit card applications in the mail all the time. Our economy has banked on you using the credit cards and going into debt. And we end up paying with time. And time is our life. Time is our life energy. So we end up paying for all these things we don't really need with our lives. So you can have everything you desire, everything that money can buy, but a diminishing quality of experience. So you can have everything and be nothing. And maybe that's what hell is. Plastic credit cards, masses of debt, enormous rates of interest, equaling massive inflation, impersonal finances, continuous production of ever new and superfluous information, exactly like the continuous production of new consumer goods that satisfy artificially created needs, easy credit, borrowing money, electronic transfers of millions, all on the surface of life. That's something you recognize. So you've probably all felt the thrill of spending money, but it doesn't take long for the rush to be gone. So it ends up you start to recognize it's more about pleasure than it is about fulfillment. It's more about filling holes, our holes of deficiency that I was talking about, rather than fulfillment. Imagine if our lust was not separated from our beingness, that rather than animal lust, we had angelic lust. The lust of being that took pleasure in love, took pleasure in truth, took pleasure in meaning, in depth and profundity. So true lust is for truth and fullness for the bounty of being, for making contact with our deeper nature, not what you have. So the joy of being doesn't come from possessions, it comes from the formless dimension that is within each one of us, then from the consciousness of who you are. So we have given value to things that don't really have value. Things have value only to the extent of the nature, their underlying nature. But it is the nature itself, it is the true nature, it is the beingness that gives it value, that is the treasure. So we need to start becoming more objective about where does value lie. So when I was living in India, I have to tell this story or the next quote won't make sense, because a dog's life in Marin is pretty good. But when I was living in India, the dogs were responsible for their own survival. And if I left food in the garbage can or in my house, immediately be overrun by ants. So I used to throw it out, any food, anything perishable, out into the yard. And pretty soon, the dog pack that came around to feed itself at night would put me on their houses that they would go to, okay? So every night, a bunch of dogs came and ate my garbage. Okay, so I'm telling you that so that the next quote makes sense. From Osho, "The art of life is to live a rich life. But the richness comes from your inner awareness. You can have a very poor life and be rich outwardly. You can have a big bank balance, but a dog's life." So it's not that money is wrong. We need it. We need it to support ourselves. There is fulfillment. Remember when you were little and then you had to start earning money and then you went to college. But the fulfillment, there's a peak to the fulfillment curve and then it starts to fall off. So we do need it to support ourselves. We do need it to grow and learn. And especially on the spiritual path, we need it. We're very lucky. We have the opportunities to have spiritual teachings. But can we have it without the drives of ambition and fame and power and security? So the next belief I want to talk about is this is the way it is. That globally, those with money wield the most power and they feel entitled to do so. And we accept this with a kind of resignation. And when we do that, we abandon our potential, our human potential, and the possibility of thriving in a healthy, equitable world. We believe it. If you look, we believe that the people who have more money are more. You know, if you listen to advertising, they even say that. You know, I was listening the other day to a Rolex ad on the radio, you know. If you wear a Rolex ad, people will see you as somebody who has value. We think that they're smarter, more able, and even more valuable, and that we're helpless about that.
There was an ad years ago that said, it's not just a car, it's who you are.
So let's go back to energy. If money is energy, it's like love. It's not a pie. So consider this, that what you have has nothing to do with anybody else. That paying attention to what you feel about money is more productive than comparing yourself to others. What anybody else has nothing to do with you. It has only to do with your perspectives, your thoughts, your beliefs. If you want your fortunes to shift, tell a different story. So if you want your fortunes to shift, tell yourself a different story. We're going to talk about how to do that. I'm not talking about the secret here. You're not going to, you know, take a spiritual principle and use it to try and obtain more material goods. What I'm talking about here is the attitude of sufficiency. When you let go of trying to get more of what you really don't need, it frees up oceans of energy. Oceans of energy for you to make a difference with what you have. When you make a difference of what you have, your experience of it expands it. And it will free up energy from the chase. So it's not how much you have, but your relationship that you have with the money. It's not that better is more, but for you to deepen your experience of what is there, of what you do have. And growth then ceases to be acquiring, an external acquiring, but rather becomes a recognition or an appreciation of what you already have. course.
The first time I realized that this practice of meditation was having an impact on me was when I did a long retreat back in Massachusetts at the Insight Meditation Society. This was many years ago. This was 1980. And having grown up, you know, a nice middle class upbringing with all the beliefs and money and material, making goods, making you happy, and having a wardrobe, and, you know, the whole disaster. I woke up one morning at the retreat center, and there I saw myself in this bare room. There was the only furniture was one chair and a foam mat on the floor. The wallpaper was kind of peeling. The windows were not in great shape. It was kind of a shambles. And I looked at, and I woke up and I was so happy. I was so happy. I lay there and it didn't compute. It was like, how can I be so happy? And I'm sitting in this bare room in the middle of the winter in Massachusetts and the wallpapers, you know, just didn't fit any of my past images of what it would take to be happy. And yet there I was, happy as a clam. I knew then that this meditation practice had a lot to teach me.
So, back to sufficiency, or continuing with sufficiency. So money's like water. So for some of us, it flows like water. So for some of us, it's a trickling stream, and for others of us, it's a rushing river. But the point about it is the flow. If it flows, it purifies, cleanses, nourishes, creates growth. If it's stagnant, it's toxic. If it's blocked, withholding, hoarding. So it can be a currency of love, it can be a currency of harm. And when it's in the domain of our soul, of our beingness, then we imbue the money that flows through our lives with those qualities, with that energy. And so we end up with soulful money. If we move money to what we care about, then it lights up for us. And what we appreciate, appreciates. So if we look at what we have as sufficient, as enough, just like Anna was just saying, it can grow. It appreciate, makes what we feel and appreciate more. If scarcity in life, work, and where you live is what you are about, if that's how you see it, then that's what you are about. If it looks like scarcity, that's what you are about. If you start to recognize that it's given you the capacity to sustain your life, your experience, then you might experience the money that you have as nourishing and growthful. So start looking at what is working rather than what isn't enough. If we appreciate what's there, we'll start to experience bounty. We'll start to experience a different quality of life. And that's really what Eckhart Tolle was talking about. When you start to appreciate what you have, more to you will be given. When you come from a place of scarcity, even that what you have will be taken away from you. And there isn't a lot of support for living like that in our society. So, you know, my husband and I live in Larkspur in Marin County, and we have a little cottage house. My husband's a contractor. We drive old cars. The car I have right now is 15 years old. And we've been trying to live with this principle for a long time. But it wasn't really supported by what was happening around us. There were people who would poke my husband and say, like, how come you're not remodeling your house? You're working in the remodeling business, but you're not remodeling your house. You know, maybe people want to hire somebody who's remodeling their house. You know, your house doesn't look like something that we would do. And, but I didn't want to do that. I wouldn't be able to be sitting here right now. I would still have to be working as a tax accountant to pay for. So my house was sufficient. My car is sufficient. I went into doubt. I have to tell you, I went into doubt, though, for a while there, when it seemed like everybody was saying the real estate was going to just keep going up, and my house cleaner, who came to me from Central America as a youngster, and then got married, and then she bought a house, and then they bought a rental house to rent out. And then I was looking at my husband and I'd say, maybe I'm wrong. I can't believe it, but maybe somewhere I'm wrong. I started to go into doubt. The pressure so strong. The pressure from the society was so strong, I started to even doubt myself. So I understand this is not an easy transition to make. Mother Teresa said talked about the poverty of soul that affects the wealthy, and she said that the poverty of the soul in America was deeper than any poverty she had seen anywhere on earth. Wow. So we did live in the richest country in the world, and yet we have this poverty mentality. Unhappiness and negativity are diseases on our planet. Some people feel like pollution on the outer is a reflection of the negativity on the inner. And it's in the most industrialized countries that we have the most pollution. So the affluent world is even more deeply identified with form, lost in content, and trapped in ego. Can you say that again? The affluent world is even more deeply identified with form, lost in content and trapped in the ego. Okay, any questions?
Do we have the mic?
Over here.
It's not a question, it's just kind of a little bit of a nagging, weird thought.
Can you just wait for the mic for a second?
I thought I was speaking so loud.
I just kept having this weird thought in between what you were saying that, don't ask me where this came from, but I kept transporting Donald Trump here, thinking about what he would say. And I was just picturing that he would say that he's just loving all that money. Now, I don't know anything about Donald Trump. I actually don't. But it becomes this thing where it becomes a real irritant to me because I picture people who are really wealthy who are enjoying it and are feeling like it's enough and that there is a sense of power. And I don't know, it's just like a little jealous little thought that comes across my head.
He hasn't woken up yet.
Let's see, Donald Trump, I don't wish the man any ill whatsoever, but, you know, let's see. You know, the real test is when you're dying. And having to let go of, you know, when you die, you're not taking it with you. So that's kind of the place of where you really get to see what somebody values.
But also, I mean, everybody in this room is moving towards consciousness. They want to be more conscious. That isn't what he values. So this question wouldn't be relevant for him.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, it's a question that's relevant for people who are wanting to know the truth and not valuing the content and the things. Yes.
Bear with me because I'm having a little trouble because I'm hearing something that I think is maybe a little bit disingenuous, but I'll accept it as me if it's just me. Because on the one hand, I hear you saying something like it's good to value almost a monastic lifestyle. But on the other hand, I'm hearing that money is not evil, that money is not a-spiritual. So where is the balance? You have a car that's 15 years old, and that's great if it runs well and it takes you where you want to go. But there are people who have cars that are broken down and that are, you know, in need of repair that they can't afford to repair, and, you know, it would be great for them to have a new car. So, you know, I don't want to leave here feeling that my aspiration to have more, to have a better relationship with money that includes comfort. I'll admit it. It includes comfort.
Yeah.
But it's healthy.
Yes.
So.
I agree. I didn't mean to say that I live a monastic lifestyle. I definitely don't. No, I wasn't saying that, and my car works very well. I'm not willing to settle for something that doesn't work either. I'm just not going to go out and lease a car and give it up after 4 years when it's perfectly good. It's just, to me, that's falling into the out of balanceness. So you're right, it's about balance, and that's why I wrote down here, balance. We've become out of balance. So when we do the exercise today, I think it will get clearer about what this means, and then we can bring it up again in the questions and comments. So I just want to say that Anna's going to tell you about a walking meditation that we're going to do. And when we come back, we will do an exercise, an inquiry, that is going to look at this whole our personal experience of sufficiency, our personal experience of scarcity, so that we can see where we are personally with this. So you can find out, rather than what I'm saying, to find out what's true for you in this. And then we'll have some time for a discussion after that.
So let me also say something, that here at Spirit Rock, we're dedicated to integrating the values of the Buddhist teaching into lives that are lived in the world, that are not lived in monasteries, but the values of lives that have families and children and jobs and the whole thing. We're committed to bringing the values of generosity and balance and compassion and wisdom into the world, not to withdraw from the world. That's not what we're about here. So just when you do the practice, we learn by going on retreat and doing these what may seem like extreme exercises, but they teach you about what you really value. You learn from spending time inside what it is that roots you in your being, what it is that you really know to be true in this life that can be counted on no matter what. So you learn a more unconditional way of being that's not reliant on having possessions or things. Nor do we, you know, I think that I just saw Michael Moore's new film. Have any of you seen it? Yeah. So, you know, that part where he gives these statistics, like 1% of the population has you know, most of the money, that it has as much money as the rest of the 99%. And the only thing they fear in terms of losing that money is the popular consciousness of the, you know, the people, the 99% can become conscious and begin to stand up and say, this is not right. And I kind of got the feeling, maybe others could confirm this, that that was what he was banking on, that we've all got to become more conscious of how out of balance we are. And to redress that seems to be the thing that perhaps we can all add to, is to redress how out of balance it has become, that 1% should have so much wealth and the 99% should be suffering. So, again, it's really our personal relationship to what is balance for us. It's not a judgment about poor people or rich people or anything. It's what is a balance, what is in balance in my life. Yes.
I was just curious how this might fit in the notion of, you know, when you talk about balance, I've often thought, well, if I let go of my home in Woodacre and I moved into something smaller, things would be easier financially, you know. But then I've heard this notion, I don't know if you addressed this at all, of like a set point within us that even if we adjust thinking that we're going to, let's say that it's relevant, that you adjust to the amount that you need. Like you may think that, I don't know how to explain this, but the notion that I've always felt in my life I made enough money to just make the expenses, and there really wasn't much, didn't matter what the expenses were. There always was this thing, and I think it's carried over from my family. And so then the thought is, well, if I go thinking, if I get rid of the bigger house, I'll scale down, then it's like there's a word for it. Then there'll be just enough money to make those expenses. I mean, it seems to me that there's a pattern of conditioning in us also.
Yeah, that's true. That, you know, we're just doing one day here, so we can't cover everything. But that it is something, you know, when we look at needs and wants and savings, you know, what is really balanced,
right,
that our, what we think is a need changes depending on how much money we have.
Right.
So that's a truth, but, you know, we're not going to be addressing how to look at that today. So we're another course, another day to look at that. But it is true.
Mm-hmm.
It is true that you know, what we think we need does change with the amount of income we have. And that's why we want to start looking at sufficiency.
Yeah.
You know?
Because this could go on.
Yeah. Could go on. Absolutely.
Yeah, that pattern could go on. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, last question.
What's coming to me from what Anna said about the retreat and her experience of the bounty within your own being. Oh, what occurs to me is that this can go on indefinitely. You know, 100 years from now, this can be being spoken of. But what I'm noticing is that my orientation, the support from the environment, has never been to explore my bounty. Or like the word education, is the root word is educare, to draw out. And I've been oriented to draw in rather than believing that the abundance is inherent to being.
Mm-hmm.
And the education system, again, we're taking things in, we're always learning, getting the notes, the handouts, and truly it hasn't prospered me in any way. And so I'm just noticing that the pearl of great price that is spoken of in biblical literature, there really is a pearl of great price that I see in my dreams. But in reality, there's not an environment that supports that and names that as a value that is something to seek for.
Well, you're in one today. This environment supports that. Spirit Rock, Diamond Heart School, that is exactly the value that is supported in those places. Mm. You named it beautifully.
So then we have to come to these places to
Absolutely.
Find the value.
Yeah. That's right.
I want to find it in my room. I want to find it in my myself.
You need support.
Yeah.
You need to hear it spoken, and you need to practice it enough so that when you go home, you don't lose it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the exercise we're going to do this afternoon is exactly designed to do that.
Mm, lovely. Okay. Lovely. Thank you.
All right. So we're going to do another walking period, and the contemplation will be on this quality of sufficiency or enoughness. Where in your life do you feel a sense of sufficiency or abundance or enough? See if you can contact where that comes up for you, because I know it absolutely does for each one of you, that there is somewhere in your life where you have a sense of well-being just about being here, about being alive. Somewhere that will occur to you. Maybe it's walking in nature. Maybe it's being with your child or your pet or some conversation or something that tells you about that aspect of life, because it is in all of us. It's not something we need to create. It's actually already present. We just are not noticing it. So to bring some attention to where it is, in what activity, in what circumstance, with what person, or when you're by yourself, or when you're engaged in a favorite hobby, where does it come through to you, this sense of just well-being that's not dependent on having or doing? Okay? So we'll spend half an hour in walking, and the bell ringer, if you would ring the bell at 10 of, oh no, let's see.
Let's 25 minutes and come back at 10 too. Do you want to do that? Because we're a little bit late.
Yeah, so ring the bell at
quarter to five.
At 3:45.
Yeah.
Ring the bell at 3:45. Who is the bell?
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.